Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ooh, new October Pod promos. Let's hear what we've got.
October Pod AM. Retro horror for bold individualists. Listen bi-weekly wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe to Octoberpod Home Video for true, true-ish, and classic tales of horror and the paranormal. New videos each month, only on YouTube. For retro horror of impeccable taste, listen to Octoberpod AM, wherever you get podcasts. You're listening to the smooth sounds of retro horror on Octoberpod AM with your host, Edward October. The best horror narrator. Stay spooky, mes amis.
Wow, that was weird. Tape must have gotten possessed. I hate when that happens. Octoberpodvhs.com.
Well, how's she cutting?
All right, like.
Tell me this and tell me no more.
I'm doing a line with her.
And then...
Number one gobble.
That's gas.
Huh? She was off gallivanting.
Roll it there, Roisin.
'Tis your one.
Hello, everybody. What is the crack? How are you doing? Nicola Bardon here, and this is Tis Yourself Podcast. What is happening with you all this lovely weekend? Hopefully it is a lovely weekend because I could really do with no more rain. Okay. So, yeah, that'd be great. So, first of all, I talked about this in last week's episode, said a couple of my goals. I know I mentioned one. I can't remember if I mentioned the seven. Anyway, so start of the year, did the, you know, write your goals down for the year. And I wrote some down for podcast. Now, I'm just going to stop for a second. There is a pigeon at my window and it is staring in at me and I'm really freaked out. Okay. So I wrote down some goals for the year and some of them haven't been achieved yet. Some of them have, blah, blah, blah. So two of them have been achieved in the last week. One of them was, and I mentioned this in the podcast last week, that I wanted to get 70 ratings on Spotify. And I think I was on 67 or something like that. And it was just sitting there for a while and I was like, come on, I just want to get to 70. So the next day, three lovely people went on and rated on Spotify. Now it's 70. Boom. So thank you to those people. It doesn't tell me who you are. So I'm so sorry. I can't thank you and name you individually. But thank you, thank you, thank you. And then another one I wrote down was I wanted to get 30,000 listens on the podcast. And that was achieved on Thursday. Yes, yes. So now I have to reset those goals and set them on again. So just add 10 to both. So let's say 40,000 listens and 80 ratings. And my next goal then is to get a new review on Apple. So who is going to be the lovely person to do that? Because I've got none in 2024. And another goal is to get into the charts on Spotify. So if you're listening to this, please share this to people on Spotify. look, I'm just glad these are here. Fair play to you. And I know why you're here, because my guest today, I know a lot of you are here for that, who may have never heard the podcast before. I know I put it up on Twitter and I got such a huge reaction. I was like, oh my God, everyone's obsessed. I'm very excited for you all to hear this. I want to say thank you to everyone who listened to my episode with Richie Sadlier last week. So if you're from outside Ireland, you're not into football, you might know Richie. He used to play for Ireland. He used to play for Millwall. But like that was up until he was 24. And now he's a trained psychotherapist working with young people on mental health and all that different stuff. And it was just such a fascinating conversation because you're going from the world of football, which I know, like, you know, I support my country. I used to follow football and then I realized that I'm too emotional and I can't follow a team every week because if they lose, I can't cope with that every week. I don't know, fair play to people who do follow it. So we did talk a lot about mental health and about men opening up, especially, etc. And it was just a really fascinating conversation. So even if you don't know him, it might be worth giving it a listen to. Now, For those of you who are here for the first time, you came because you saw a tweet or an Instagram or a TikTok or whatever that brought you here because you wanted to hear about Big Brother. So I have the lovely Kerry Riches on with me, and oh my God, we talked everything, everything. So much so that we actually went over an hour talking, and I had so many other Big Brother questions to ask that I didn't even get to finish them, but we talked so much about it, but I still was kind of like, as we were talking, going, oh my God, I wanted to know, like, one question, maybe I'll follow up with her. Jenkins' edit was not great. I thought I really liked Jenkins at the start, and his edit just wasn't great. He came across very grumpy. Same with Chanel. And I love Welsh people, as people in this podcast will know, and people in my life. I'm obsessed with Wales. Obsessed. It's my favourite accent in the world. And I instantly was mad about the two of them. And their edit just wasn't brilliant. And I know because all of them are still friends. Like, the people that you thought were enemies on the show are friends now in real life. So that makes me think that it was just, you know, the way the edit was. We talked about the love triangle and how the housemates didn't know anything about it. We talked about another couple that was in there. We talked about Dylan. We talked about, we obviously talked about January. Don't you worry, that is coming. We talked about Carrie's experience, what she believes now after being out of the house. Does she think people should go into it this year, etc.? And also we talked about her MS journey, because on Monday, so if you're listening to this on Saturday the 20th, Monday the 22nd, for the following week, it is MS Awareness Week. So Kerry is their ambassador for the week. Obviously she has been quite public with her journey with MS. It's great, I'm sure, for the community to have someone who's willing to be outspoken and to talk about it. And we do talk about her journey with her health and everything else in the episode. So you might learn a lot about MS, and that is obviously a great thing if we all could know a little bit more about a condition that affects so many people. Like, here in Ireland alone, there's more than 9,000 people who have MS. So, like, that is a large number, and we probably should know more about it. And I, instead of doing loads of research, I wanted to hear it from Kerry's point of view. And I think I learned more that way than just reading a Wikipedia page or an HSC page, you know? Anyway, I'm going to let you guys hear the episode. I know that's why you're here. So please enjoy my chat with Kerry.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You look so glam this morning.
Well, don't. I need to do something. I felt like I'd been dug up when I was. And also, can I please apologise about my really discoloured fire alarm? Do you want to know something, right? I found out the other day. I'm Kerry, by the way. Pleased to meet you. Nicola. Well, I tell you about my fire alarm. So I found out the other day they have to be replaced after 10 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, God, how long is it there?
So it's 10 years in May. It's one of the ones that's plumbed into all the electrics. And I only know this because, hold on, the other night, from 3 o'clock in the morning, beep.
No. Beep.
You know, when you smack, I wanted to smash it off of the ceiling, literally. But I took the top off and there was no battery in there. Then I realised it was literally wired into the house and it didn't stop. And at that point, I was like, I wouldn't even know they need to be replaced after 10 years. So they will not be yellow come 26th of April, which is what? Next week.
Next week. You're like, I'll send you a picture of my new white.
It's a deal. It's happening.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you. I loved Big Brother. Loved. Not really a huge reality shows kind of person, because I don't ever... Because commitment can seem too much to me sometimes. So I've loads, but this year, last year, oh my God. So I've loads to talk to you about. But I want to know, first of all, young Kerry, you know, dreaming of being a reality star, was that a thing? What were you thinking when you were younger that you wanted to be growing up?
No, not at all. So when I was really young, I was like, I'd quite like to be a vet because I loved animals. But I soon realised that I wasn't grown up enough for that. Like, I liked certain animals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrified of cats. And I don't think I'm going to, like, you know, you can't have, like, a sign up. All animals welcome, but cats are a no. Just because I was utterly terrified of cats, I got scratched by one when I was little. So that soon went, you know. So the vet thing went. And then from the age of about 4 or 5, me and my cousin used to do these... you know, like productions in your nan's front room. We'd get like all the family there, and me and my cousin would do like Rod, Jane, and Freddie, and we'd be like, And we used to always argue about who was going to be Rod, Jane or Freddie. And I always wanted to be Jane because I had blonde hair, but she did as well. And then none of us really wanted to be the puppets anyway. But I've always quite, I always liked performing. I did pantomimes from the age of seven. Did musicals. Loved that world. Loved entertaining. Loved singing, acting, dancing. And then wanted to desperately get into event organising. I wanted to, I become super girly. I love love. I'm a hopeless romantic. I used to say that all the time to Henry and Jordan actually in the house. I was like, so I want you to be together. I'm a hopeless romantic, so much so that I love the idea of planning weddings, planning big events. Just, I thrive on being busy, being hectic, being stressed. Which all of those are not great for MS. So like that was like a game changer when that diagnosis came. But no, never, never a reality star.
And what stopped you from doing the like acting and all that as a career? Because you seem to really love it.
Love it, love it, love it. Probably because just that world of A-levels, uni, adulting, and sort of my parents telling me to get a proper job.
Yeah.
Actually. So I remember coming back from uni and crying all the way back saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I just didn't want to be, I'm such a home bird. I love my family. My family are everything. And they were like, that's fine. Don't do it. But you've got to get yourself a job then. So I looked into how I could get into event organising, but they really needed me to have experience in diary management or at least planning meetings rather than big corporate events. So I one day went for a job to be the PA to the Director of Public Health in the NHS. And for anyone that works in the NHS, once you're in, you're sucked in, like there's never leaving. And then, yeah, 21 years later, so I went to the bright lights of the NHS at the age of 19 and left last November.
That is mad. So something that you kind of saw as a stopgap to get into somewhere else and you're like, oh no, I'm still here.
And do you know what that was for me? It was about patience and my love and my need to make things better for people. I'm such a mum. I'm a nurturer. I genuinely love people. So whilst I started in public health, and one of my first jobs was hanging condoms in trees. Honestly. So I worked for public health and I worked for an amazing lady called Jane. I won't say her surname because she might be really embarrassed. I worked for an amazing lady called Jane and she was our sexual health coordinator. And I loved everything about it. And we literally knew that our gay community were having sex in, you know, I live in Essex and it was Epping Forest. And there was this big campaign about hanging condoms on trees, about practicing safe sex. And honestly, from there, I just realised that whilst I would really enjoy planning weddings, I felt like I was making a difference doing what I was doing. Then I would organise events for our gay community. We did work with Terence Higgins Trust at the time as well. And it was a world I wanted to be in. And I just feel like, and then from there, I got straight into patient experience, handling complaints, working in the power service, getting involved in, you know, much in, like, more recently, before I left, I was head of patient experience. So, you know, there's really grown up cases whereby we're talking life or death. And it's such a privilege to sit with families at a time where they feel like they've got no one. They're emotionally rock bottom. And you are in such a privileged position where either you're sitting with their loved one whilst they pass away, which we did a lot of in COVID, or you're being their friend, being their support when they've just sort of, you know, said goodbye to their family or their loved one on the ward, and they come to my office and, you know, they sit with us for a little while. And it was, and from there, it was like, it was a world that I just wanted to be part of and, yeah, never left.
Because I have a friend who works in the NHS and a friend's obviously over here in Ireland who work in the HSE, and it's like, it's a job I don't know if I could do because I'm so emotional. So like, you know, what you guys did during COVID when people weren't be able to be in the rooms and you had to be the person beside the bed, the last person they see. I don't, like, I honestly don't know how you did it. Like, it takes a special kind of human being to be able to do those kind of jobs.
I've always said that, and my team are worth their weight in gold, and anyone that works in PALS, we have a service in this country, in UK, called PALS, Patient Advice and Liaison, and anyone that works there, because no one really comes to PALS if they're having a great time. They're always a bit upset, they're a bit angry, they're not having a good experience, and it's 9 times out of 10 a complaint. We do receive lots of compliments. Well, we did receive, in the past tense, I used to work there, I don't now, but you know, you used to receive lots of compliments, but they're not the things that make the headlines. So 9 times out of 10, it's the horrible complaints that you hear lots of. And every day, you know, we'd turn up with a smile on our face, and we'd make the best of a very, very difficult, situation for our families and loved ones. And we really would make a difference. And we made a pledge as well at the hospital that I worked at, no one would die alone. So during COVID, when families couldn't come in, someone sat with someone whilst they passed away. We obviously couldn't have visitors either in our hospital. So we did something called Message to a Loved One. And we did lots of FaceTime calling with lots of iPads that were donated to the hospital as well. But it was a genuine privilege. But the reason why I went into Big Brother was because I applied for a career break. COVID took its toll. And I was ready to take a career break. So I took an uncreated career break, which I thought was going to be a year. And I was going to do some reflective writing because I had a lot of things to say that I needed to get out of my head and onto paper, because I was driving myself mad. Like, I'd seen stuff that I'll never be able to unsee.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing, you know, that's the other side of it that maybe some people don't think of. They think of you guys as the nurses, the doctors, the staff, you know, you're male and you're brilliant, but like, you take that home with you. There's certain stories that are going to come home with you every time, and you don't unsee. It's the same with the police and stuff. Like, you don't think of the mental health of workers, you know?
You give your whole self when you work in the NHS. I used to, my husband used to take my child, me and my husband, we've got a 16 now. My husband used to take my son to school. My mum used to pick him up. I used to start work at 7:30 in the morning and still be working at 11 at night. It's a vocation. You just give your whole self. And there's been times where, you know, and it's been difficulty. And I spoke about it a lot in Big Brother. I don't think it was televised. I haven't watched none of it back, but a huge amount of mum guilt. We deal with that as mums anyway. But I think when you work in the NHS more so, you know, I used to do my absolute best to say to my team, I've got to be left by 4:30 today. I've got to get to parents' evening. But actually, if that family needed to be more on the ward because something was not going very well at all for that patient, then my husband would go alone to the parents' evening.
Because you're caring for other people, and then you feel guilty because you're not spending some of that care on your kids. So it's
100%. Like, it really is. You take your whole self to work. And that's why I knew last year when I came out of Big Brother, and I'd had such a wonderful time. My amazing trust sort of said to me, look, are you coming back after your career break or not? And I said, no, I think I'm ready to do something else, actually. And I was an inclusion champion anyway at the hospital. And that raising awareness of multiple sclerosis was the reason why I went into Big Brother. And it's just really flown since then, just being able to raise it. And with MS Awareness Week starting on the 22nd, it's my everything to be the spokesperson for that. So, yeah.
When did you get diagnosed with MS?
Yeah, so my son was born in the April and I was diagnosed in the October. I knew something weren't right. And I'm one of the, and, you know, working in the NHS a long time as well, you know that actually as a patient, you've got to be persistent, because I stand by the fact that no one knows you than you.
Yeah.
Patients know their own body. Like, I know that if I knew that that headache wasn't a normal headache, mm-hmm. I knew that me tripping over my feet wasn't just a side effect from me having a C-section. I knew that that sensation that I was getting on my hands, which I knew I was touching, my hand, but I couldn't feel it. So I could feel pressure, but I couldn't feel a scratch. It's the most bizarre sensation. And I kept going back to the doctors, and they did say, you know, just had a baby, give yourself a break. And I'm like, I'm not leaving here without an MRI. I think I've got a brain tumour. And my doctor was like, I think you're being a bit melodramatic, but I hear you and I'm going to listen to you because it's real. What you're saying to me is real.
Yeah.
And I hear what you're saying. And I'm so grateful for that doctor, because I was diagnosed, properly diagnosed from start to finish in about 4 to 6 weeks.
Wow.
Some people wait a lifetime. I feel like a song's coming for a moment like this. But some people really do wait a lifetime. They really do, because it gets masked by other things. I know that my neurologist had said before that people get told they've got, is it fibromyalgia?
Yeah.
And that manifests into something else. So I was so lucky that they went straight in with a multiple sclerosis. And that's how I felt. I felt that at the time. I never cried when I got diagnosed. It was a relief for me. It was like, I'm not going mad.
Yeah. I can understand that though, because like much lesser scale, but I went to a doctor last year. I knew, as you said, I knew everything in my body. I know my body. I was like, it's wrong. And yeah, like, I was explaining the symptoms and she kind of was like, and one of them was weight gain. And she was like, it's just that you're getting older. And I know you're saying you're active, but like, are you as active as you say you are? And, you know, as a woman getting older, you are going to put on weight. And I just went, but if that was just it, fine. I was like, but I explained all these things. She was really kind of condescending, but like you, she said, I'll do the tests or whatever. Came back, extremely underactive thyroid. I was like, I bloody told you there was something going on. And you know, you're right. You really have to be persistent and just keep going.
Have to be, because I stand by, and it's one of the things that I've always, I did pride myself on, and the reason why I went so high in the NHS inpatient experience, because genuinely patients know their own bodies better than anyone else. And whilst our GPs know a little bit about a lot of things, they're incredibly intelligent. Yeah. No one knows you like you. So just keep on.
And especially if it's symptoms that you can't see, like, so you said the headaches and the tingling and the not being able to feel your hand, they're things that you can't show to another person. Yeah. You just have to feel them.
I knew my nut wasn't right. I absolutely knew. And like, it's hard because you just want to, if you break your arm, you see the break. If you cut yourself, you see the cut. If you get a sore throat, you can hear it. The brain, the mind is just, is scary. And I just wanted to get in there so much and be like, I know I'm not right. This isn't just baby brain anymore, because so many people want to put it down to that.
Yeah. And you, especially you just had your kid and you're going through all the emotions and that, and then someone not believing and you're like, oh.
It was a really difficult time, but also never ever do not underestimate a woman that has just given birth, because we are even more, that bit between my teeth, I was like, somebody listen to me. I was hormonal, I'd just stopped breastfeeding. That doctor probably thought, give her the MRI, get her out, give her it. But I was, and I stand by that, and I say that to everybody that I speak to in the MS community, keep going. Have a voice, like really, really, because I'm not saying you've got MS, but your symptoms aren't right. Yeah. Your symptoms aren't normal. There's something going on.
And how much did your life change after that diagnosis? Like, did you have to alter your life in any kind of way?
I was in a wheelchair for 3 years when I first got diagnosed.
Not being in a wheelchair and then 3 years.
So I had a really, really, really bad fall. I had a bad break in my ankle. I was carrying my son when I did fall. And it was a real, because my symptoms were that, and I still don't have great feeling from my knees down. So it was the tripping thing that was, I was falling for no reason at all. And I walk with crutches and sticks, and I've obviously got a mobility scooter now, but yeah, it's changed beyond recognition. And I think probably the hardest thing for me was not feeling like I'll never be able to do the stage thing again, be able to go, you know, be back in a pantomime, go on, you know, ever get back into that world that I so desperately wanted to still do, even if it just be a hobby, because it felt so unachievable anymore. You don't see people like that on the telly, on the stage. So it just felt like something that I was like, it was great while it lasted, but that chapter's well and truly closed now. But clearly not, because I'm making a comeback. I really feel like it's something that, like, I really feel like now more than ever, because it takes a while to get your head around a diagnosis. And I suppose, and the way it affects your family as well is just, my mum sat next to me in the GP surgery And she cried a lot. She said, I want it to be me. And I was like, that's not helpful. Because I'm telling you now, out of everyone in the family, I've absolutely got this. I've absolutely got this. Like, there's no one that can handle this diagnosis better than me. Plus, I wouldn't want any of them to have it. But, and I stand by that. Like, I feel like I've always been a very much half glass full type of person. So bring it on. It's not going to, I say as well, and I say it in my bio of my socials, I let MS live with me rather than live with MS. Because I take full control of it. Like, yeah, I have to listen to my body and I know when I'm overdoing it. But yeah, I suppose I couldn't imagine life without it now. It's my superpower. It stops me from doing nothing, nothing.
That is so good to hear because, you know, as you said, it's MS week next week. There's people that are going to hear this who maybe are going through the process, just got a diagnosis or whatever. Yeah. I think, oh God, they might have Googled it, which can often be the worst thing you ever do in your life. And they see worst case scenarios and like one person in 500,000 who has something, some mad symptom that nobody else has. But of course, you're jumping to that. You're going, that's going to be me. I'm going to be the person who never walks again or whatever it is. And like everyone's MS journey, just same with every condition, is going to be very different.
I've never met, and I've met thousands, I've never met one person with MS whose journey, whose treatment pathway, whose care plan is the same as mine. I really mean that. Just do you. Don't play Dr. Google. It never ends well. I really mean that. And talk, because whilst no one walks in your shoes, you're not alone. And that's a big thing, because once you do get talking to people, it's like, oh yeah, I've wet myself in public. Oh yeah, I've been caught short food myself. Or, you know, there's been a time where actually I've wanted to have sexual intercourse, but there's been no feeling there. It's not all the time, but it's happened before. Yeah. And just talking to other people. And I've been doing lots and lots of work with the MS Society, and 3 in 5 people hide their symptoms from loved ones. They don't even feel like they can talk to their family about it. So how alone must they feel? I'm a massive oversharer. I'm a massive oversharer. I'm sure that comes as a great surprise to you, but I literally feel like a problem. And I've always been brought up, my mum was very much instilled this in, a problem shared is a problem solved, or at the very least halved, because you've shared it with someone else.
Yeah.
And really, I love talking, and I love people connecting, people coming together and just, yeah, sharing experiences.
Yeah, because I imagine, okay, so let's say, you know, I have a condition and my family don't understand when I say I've got like chronic fatigue, or, you know, I've got headaches that you can't like, just suddenly come on all of a sudden, or whatever the symptom is. But yet, if I reach out to somebody, let's say in the MS community, who may not have had that symptom but has a similar one, you're guaranteed maybe one of the symptoms somebody has been through. And it must be such a relief to talk to somebody who knows exactly what you're talking about, who's not embarrassed, who's like, oh, that happened to me yesterday. You know, whatever it is, that must be such a relief.
It really is. And so many people, and I never forget, this started probably about 10 years ago when I met a particular colleague that I was working with. She's like, you're the most unshockable person I've ever spoken to. And I'm like, yeah, so what? She's like, no, it's brilliant. It's really refreshing. And that's what I want to instill in the MS community. No one should be shocked up. So not when I talk about the 3 in 5 won't talk to their family, over a quarter won't talk about bowel issues with the healthcare professional. Now, this is what I always think, when, and I'm trying to do this on MS, on lives, and when I'm talking to lots of people, our healthcare professionals don't know what they don't know. So they can't come up with new treatment, and we can't move forward in the world of research if we don't talk to them about it. So why are we not, really, why are we not saying, why are we not shouting from the rooftop, one minute I'm really constipated and the next I'm shitting through the eye of a needle? Like, let's just talk about this, because I can't possibly have a solid poo in the morning where I literally can't go, and the next time it's like liquid, like it's just, and I haven't eaten anything in between. Like, it's so, there's something going on inside that we're just not okay about talking to anyone, it seems, about. And we'll never get that treatment, that medication that we need, because we're not telling them that's happening.
What's weird about that for me is that you're afraid to tell, well, everybody telling other people, but afraid to tell a doctor. I'm sorry, do you think that's the weirdest thing a doctor has heard? Every year we hear about doctors who have found things shoved up asses. And you're like, you think the fact that you had diarrhea is the weirdest thing that that doctor has heard? It's not even the weirdest thing he'll have heard that day.
I get it. I totally get it. I get it, but I, you know, and I'm not, I'm by no means perfect. I get where they're coming from. I still get really, really huge anxieties when it comes to my smear test. I sort of think, oh my God, I'm getting my nunny out. The only other person that's seen it is my husband. Da, 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 da. And I'm thinking, and I get in the room and she's like, oh, you're my 16th smear of the day.
Yeah.
Probably 618,000 of the year, but I still think that I'm really special. It's ridiculous. We're not that special.
No, she's like looking at you going, that's the weirdest one I've ever seen. Like, my nurse always talks to me through it, and I'm like, I don't know if I prefer you to be silent or I want you to talk to me. And I'm always like just sitting there frozen in fear, but you just have to get it done. And I love how they give you privacy to take off your trousers and put them back on. I'm like, is there any need?
I agree with you like that. Although she'll go, here's some blue roll to cut, like some blue stuff to cover your money. So I'm like, you're going to see my nunny. It's fine. But it's really important that we talk about these things. And I had a smear done this year as well. And again, they're the sorts of things that we just need to, they're scary. They can be scary, but I just feel like this is why I love next week's, because I really fit the whole hashtag MS unfiltered, because I've got verbal diarrhea and I just love it. And I think it's important that we talk about it because so many people don't.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'm learning so much from just hearing about it. Cause when I knew I was going to talk to you, I was like, do I do loads of research on MS? And like, I remember putting it in and I saw all the shock, scary stories, but then I was like, I actually should come about this the way that I am. I know very little about MS and I need to learn from it. Because there's people who are going to listen to this who don't know anybody with MS and they're going, what is it? And it's like, well, how about someone who actually is going through it explains it rather than a Google Doc tells me what it is.
Exactly that. And there's three different types. And I've got relapsing remitting, then there's secondary progressive and there's primary progressive. And they're all at different stages of someone's disease. And definitely the severity differs massively. I am so incredibly fortunate that I have the best of a bad bunch. Some remittings means that I have real moments of remittance. So I have moments where I relapse, then I get better, or I relapse and I stay where I am, but I don't get worse. Okay. And I'm on some incredible treatment, and we've come so far with medicine, even just in the 16 years that I've had it. I started off really early doors, injecting myself once a week. I have all these big lumps all over my legs, where the needle used to go in, but because I wasn't a trained professional and I'd maybe like nick a vein or something ridiculous, and I'd have all these like lumps all over my legs, and I was like, I can't continue like this. So I went on to, so I did Avonex, Copaxone. I have two tablets, which is Tecfidera. But that, I actually, for me, Tecfidera, I would go as far as say, ruined my life. Because being quite a senior manager in the job that I did, I used to take this tablet, and about 2 hours after, I'd feel like fire going from my feet up to my head. I'd then have to go a poo, and it was not solid. I'd get severe diarrhea with this medication. And I would sit there, and I realised that I had a big problem with this when we particularly went into the first bit of lockdown. Mm-hmm. And I'd be on a Zoom call, and it's terrible. I'd pretend that I'd lost signal or power or Wi-Fi. So either I have to turn my camera off to like preserve the internet connection. Or if I was so bad and needed to go to the toilet in a nanosecond, I'd pretend I'd lost Wi-Fi, because the side effects were so massive for me. I said to my neurologist, I can't take this medication. It's brilliant and it's helping my MS massively, but the side effects are debilitating. I can't work with them. So yeah, I then soon went on Ocrevus, and which is a 6 month infusion where I get linked up into it is an infusion, it's a cannula, and I sit there for 6 hours while they pump lots of medication into my body, and it's the best thing I've ever been on. But again, one size doesn't fit all. Yeah. There are so many people out there that can't deal with Ocrevus. They say that they're really poorly and fatigued on that. But Yeah, it's lovely to just go to the Royal London once every 6 months for 6 hours, see the incredible staff that are up there, and then not think about treatment again for another 6 months. I'm going to take other tablets. Mm. I take stuff to stop me weeing. Like, literally, I take this tablet because otherwise I'll wake up about 60 times in the night.
Oh, God, my pain.
It really is, because sleep, because fatigue is a big thing with MS. So you often become, yeah, you become tired. So your sleep is everything, everything. So the moment you shut your eyes, and you might not be able to get off straight away as well, she's got pain or pins and needles or something. So once you're asleep, you want to stay asleep. So I have my last wee, I take my tablet, and then I probably get up at the moment. Like this morning, I got up at 5. The alarm weren't going off till 7:15, but I can deal with that. I went to bed at 10:15, got up at 5 for my first wee. I do struggle at that moment then to go back to sleep for them last 2 hours, because often my pain relief things run out. So the old pins and needles and whatnot have come back. Oh, honestly, this is why I struggled in the Big Brother house, because you don't know the time. And at home, I'm such a stickler for routine. Mm. I know that I take my tablet, then I go to sleep, da-da-da-da. In the Big Brother house, you don't know the time. But I was very clear, and they were brilliant. Welfare were incredible in Big Brother. I didn't want to be treated any differently. They probably, if I'd have asked them, they'd probably have given me some sort of watch or clock or something, because there was another house member that had access to time, because she prayed frequently. But I didn't want to know that. I wanted to fully immerse myself in the whole experience.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That was, so going into Big Brother, MS awareness was one of the reasons. But like filling out the form, when you saw the ad for it and everything, and you're like, right, it's back. Like, what was the thing that went, right, I'm gonna do this?
I'm a Big Brother super fan. I've watched it since the day Craig Phillips went in the house and won it. The first ever episode. I was, 16, 17? And I love people and I love talking. And I love the premise of that social experience, living people you would never meet, being thrown together and just chatting 24/7, chatting, meeting new people, sharing experiences, learning. And yeah, it was a no-brainer. So I didn't straight away think, oh, I'm going to apply for Big Brother. I applied for my career. I was on my career break, or I knew I was going to take it because I was going to do some reflective writing. And then I said to my husband one day, I don't think I'm going to do reflective writing. And he went, I think you probably need to. I was like, no. I said, I've got a book and I will do lots of like thought dumping in my book and stuff. I said, but I've decided I'm going to go on Big Brother. I'm going to apply for Big Brother. No, I didn't. I said, I'm going to go on Big Brother. And he was like, well, steady on, Kel. I think there's quite a lot of auditions to get through. I was like, no, it'll be fine. You wait, you wait. No one in this day and age will have even heard about it. Well, there was thousands and thousands of people applied. And I just never, ever, ever looked back. It was, I can't talk about the audition progress. I don't think I'd get in trouble, but I wouldn't want to ruin it for anyone that's going through it now, but there is a lot of stages that you've got to get through. Every single one, you are looked after incredibly well. Everyone is different. And because it started and we were still sort of in that COVID-esque coming out type, a lot of them were either on Zoom or telephone calls. It was only when you got quite a way down the line, they were like, oh, we'd quite like to meet you in person now. And I was like, oh, this is actually happening, isn't it? But I never, ever felt like it was always a pinch me moment. Walking through them doors was a real pinch me moment, or scooting through them doors was a pinch me moment. But I manifest my way through life. Mm. So if I want something, like, I'm there already. My nan used to say to me, she's all the way there and halfway back her, because I was so, as a kid, I was just like, I want everything yesterday. I'm dead impatient. So yeah, in my head, I knew what I was wearing on my launch night.
The weirdest experience, sitting in that car with like the other cars behind you, you don't know who they are. And they're like, then they come out and it's just like Will and AJ and the crowd. And you're like, oh, this actually happened. I'm actually here.
Don't be talking to me about all the other cars behind me, girlfriend. I was the last one. There were no cars behind me. I was in that car for hours.
Hours.
Hours, hours. showers. And if we needed to go to the toilet, we weren't allowed to bump into anybody. So we had to go to the toilet under these jellyfish umbrellas. When I tell you that the love I have for Big Brother before I even went in Big Brother was strong. Now, I don't want to go. When I went back for CBB to do some filming with Will Bessett, I don't ever want to go home. It's like a new family. I love the production. I love the welfare. I love the PR. I love Will and AJ. I love my fellow housemates. I love everything about Big Brother. Like, I love it, love it. So when they put so much effort into these black umbrellas with these long, like, jellyfish strips to the floor. And all I remember, right, this is an exclusive that I've never told anyone. Where I was sitting in my car, imagine a massive car park, you're sitting in your car. Where I was sitting, someone went by me in the most beautiful, beautiful, like, the headlights of our car were like picking up on these sparklies, and this beautiful dress with these beautiful shoes. And I now know, since obviously I realised I'm not, that Liv had walked past me because she needed to go to the toilet, Olivia. Wow. So she'd gone past me. But yeah, where I was, they'd obviously parked my car. So listen, because I need to wee a lot, and I made that very clear to everyone, where they parked my car, I was the closest to the toilet. Unbelievably, not many people went with their jellyfish to the toilet, I must say. But I do remember Liv going past. So, yeah, and I've never told her that, actually, funny enough. But I remember now when I look back, I'm like, that was Olivia. That was Olivia's dress and her beautiful shoes and everything about it. And I weirdly didn't go to the toilet in the jellyfish. I was worried about falling. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I couldn't wait to get in the house. My scooter already had been to the studio as well. So the reason why they parked me so close to the toilets was because if I got out of the car, I'd just use my stick to get to the loo. Yeah. And then, yeah, I was reunited with my scooter as soon as I got out of the car. But when I got out of that bloody car and got in the scooter, I was so nervous and so excited and screaming. Like, honestly, I made noises I'll never be able to replicate again. I was like screaming like a banshee. And I got in my scooter and I sort of got how to use it. And I've driven a scooter for the last 15 years. It was pathetic.
Where do I go? What do you mean? What? How does this button work?
They had a ramp for me. It was like something for Mario Kart.
It's so funny because when I think about when you were saying there, like, you meet different types of people, I remember when I was watching it going, who do I think I like? Just on episode one, you know? And I remember seeing Henry and being like, oh, he's probably not my type of person. He's so posh. He's so into food. You know, he seems very rich and he's probably not going to be my, you know, type. By the end, I wanted Henry to win. I was like, team Henry all the way. When he cried, I cried. And there was other people in there that I looked at and I was like, oh, I bet I'll really like them. And then as you watch them, you kind of go, oh, actually, like, appearance wise, you can be a very different person on the first episode than you can be in by day even six.
Yeah, no, I am Henry and I. Henry, so the four people that I gelled with instantly would be Jordan, Henry, and Hallie. Hallie was the first person that come up to me and she literally said, hey, mama. So that was lovely. That really felt like a moment where, it was a moment actually when she said that, because we really were like bloody mother and daughter whilst we were in there. We had a great time. But Henry and I bonded much, much, much more in week two when he was up against Zach. And I'd obviously already been up with Farida and survived it. So he sort of come to me and he said, this is a really rubbish feeling. And I was like, I know, isn't it? He's like, and you're the only one here I can talk to that knows what it feels like. Yeah. I was like, believe in yourself. And he was like, oh, do you know what? Zach's got so many followers on Instagram. I was like, no, but Farida was the same, babe. Like, I didn't even have social media, not TikTok, not Insta. Like, no one knew of me. I was like, but just be yourself and you're going to be all right, Henry. Like, there was something in that boy that was so special. And from that moment, I was the first person he'd come to when they'd had their kiss under the table, him and Jordan. And it was just really, I just got on with the boys so well. And I always got on very well with Jordan anyway. We used to talk about Absolutely Fabulous. We both love very similar TV. And then when we did that middle management task, when he come out, I kid you not, he come out with a flashing beacon as the fire warden. And he sat next to me and he went, this is a really big responsibility, Kerry. And I was like, I know it is, Jordan. He said, so much so, I liken it to like a, a doctor on a plane when someone has a medical emergency. And I looked at him and I was like, are you having a laugh? You've got to go. You've got to go in the garden, blow a whistle and get us all to stand in a square shape. You're not saving a life. Like, it was a real moment between us. And we were killing ourselves laughing. But we passed the time brilliantly, me and Jordan together, because we'd pretend that, like, emails and phone calls, I mean, they weren't linked up to nothing. So when I pick up phone, go, hello, Batsy, dog's home. Like, we were just mucking about. And he go, I've got a call for you to put through. Because Farida kept saying, why does she keep getting all the calls? And we were just mucking about. There was nothing plugged in. There was nothing.
We're bored. Let us just do something, you know?
The stuff you do in that house as well when you're bored, it's just a joke.
You must, yeah, like, see clips and stuff and you're like, why was I actually doing that? And then you kind of go, oh, probably boredom. Probably boredom. Well,
I've watched nothing back, but one thing that I do know that wasn't showed was we knew quite early doors it was going to be Jordan's birthday. And he's so grown up and so together and so, just so Downton is the best way. He's just so Downton Abbey. We didn't have any means of sort of party equipment. And you can ask Big Brother all you want, but if they don't want to give you it, they don't. They'll say, well, Big Brother suggests that you know, use your own initiative. Well, that was the worst thing they could have said to us. So by that time, we're blowing up condoms because there was condoms in the toilet. We're blowing up condoms as party balloons. We also had these ribbons that had been given to us from, I don't know what task we'd done, but we had these ribbons. So we'd then organised it. And I don't think you saw it, which is a real shame, but me and Liv, we did like an aerial display where I ran around. Oh, no, I didn't run. I scooted around the sofas with a ribbon. She was dancing across the middle of the table. And I mean, it was a delightful spectacle. I don't know why it didn't make the telly.
Probably because there was no drama involved in that. Nobody was fighting.
That's very true. And then, yeah, and then one of the housemates put a condom on their head and blew it up with, that was a party piece that, it was very clever actually. Hulk can put a condom on his head and blow it up by his nose. He blows air out of his nose and then the balloon sort of goes, incredible.
I'm getting claustrophobic thinking about it. I'm like, oh my God.
Very good lungs, clearly. The way he was able to blow this. I was impressed. I was super impressed. And then they all started to try and then Big Brother comes over the tunnel. Big Brother would suggest that housemates do not put condoms on their head. And we were like, okay, fair enough. That is silly.
Condoms, they must have obviously were planning some romances in the house if they were prepared with the condoms.
You get everything in there. You get everything. You get condoms, you get sanitary towels, you get tampons, you get everything you can think of. They look after you like no other. Like, I can't, the welfare and the, I'm just so grateful to be part of a show that was just so, it's iconic.
Oh my God, yes, it's so iconic. And it came back iconic as well, because it could have came back and not lived up to what I used to be. But it came back, had a new, completely new audience. Like, I don't know if you saw any of the stuff like on social media and on Twitter and stuff, but like, people were obsessed. They were watching the live streams going, you know, Kerry said this to Liv, and, you know, like, putting out quotes. And it's, I'm like, we've only just watched an hour and then you watched live and late, and then people were still watching like 3 hours afterwards. I was like, lads, okay, go to bed.
So I don't have Twitter, no. And like I said, I didn't even have TikTok or Instagram until I come up. Well, listen, I had Instagram, but I was one of them people that had I followed 120 people. No one followed me, but it was only my son's friends that I followed, because I needed to know what he was up to, where he was. I was that mum. I was a stalker. I was a mum stalker. Or things like if he's watching I don't know, Sidemen Sunday or particular people, I wanted to know what content he was watching. I tell him I was being a responsible mama. He thinks I was just being a nosy Parker.
You're like, I was both, actually. And, well, see, like, I suppose Twitter was the main place people were doing, like, live reactions to things and stuff like that. But it was funny because when you think back now, and, like, we see the way you guys are all friends and stuff now, stuff that probably seemed dramatic at the time was probably just a lot more dramatic out of boredom.
Tell me, give me an example. What was a big thing?
Well, one thing that I actually didn't see, but a lot of people saw, was this idea of Olivia and Paul being like a romance. That was a big idea. Although people were really annoyed that Paul would not put on his bloody T-shirt. And I was on that side. I was like, Paul, put on your clothes.
Oh, listen, though, I've got to be honest, he's a lovely looking boy. Let him have his T-shirt off. He just, but even now, if you follow him on Instagram, he's never got a T-shirt on. He's a real, he's happy. He's got some lovely tattoos as well. And he's just, it wasn't for the cameras. He just don't like wearing clothes.
Yeah.
Well, we would like to live and pull, though. And I was asked about this when I came off. Do you think they'll get together? No, I don't. And there was one episode, which my husband said was shown. Them two were fighting during the ant task and they were having a proper argument dressed as ants. And Paul came out in the garden to me and he was like, I'm marrying with her dressed as an ant. This is pathetic. And I was like, yeah, it is a little bit. And then they still weren't talking before they went to bed. And I just said to both of them, you're genuinely like, they're like twins. Mm. They were so alike. She's a crazy daisy and he's equally as just... The energy they've both got, they really are like, if you told me they were twins separated at birth, I'd have believed you. They're so alike. Just their energy, the way they love the gym, the things they eat, they really look after themselves. And they're just, their love for life in being a bit mischievous. Like, well, you saw lettuce. I've had lettuce on me. It was so much fun. They were so much fun. But I wasn't going to let them go to sleep that night without sorting it out. And I remember Liv had just come out of the diary room and Paul was like, I was like, sort it out of her now. And I remember him running to meet her almost. And I've since found out actually by Paul's mum that she said, thank you so much because you being in there was really like Paul, like I was that mother figure because she said, I don't lie. You know, I was so pleased you got them to make it up. Mm. Yeah, I genuinely loved, absolutely. There was no one in that house that I disliked, and I cherished every single minute I had with every one of them.
And what about your own like personal memories that you think of, like that might be in highlights or lowlights, and you kind of look back now and go, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, you know, what, like it seemed like a bigger deal at the time, and now you kind of go, oh, I was just tired or whatever it was.
Everything, absolutely everything, I suppose. I mean, I really enjoyed the moment when I was in there, but the slime task was a real low moment for me. I knew the route on the checkerboard, but it looked so different when you stood back to when I got on there. And I was going to ask the cast and crew, could I go and get my crutch? Because where I knew I needed to be, when I was on my scooter, and I had to put my two wheels on the route, and they were like, this is so much harder for Kerry, like, and it was difficult, but it doesn't matter. I didn't want to be treated any differently. And I've since found out they were a bit like, at the time, should we even like say that she's exempt from this trial, because it just, but they always included me and it was incredible. But so I got on this checkerboard, and where my two wheels were, because my two wheels were there, my next wheels were there, and I was sitting here. I used to span across about 3.5 checkerboards. And I remember saying, when it was my go, and it was like, it was the last pace to get into the vintage party, I was going to say to Big Brother, can someone just run and get my stick? But I'd seen how much slime there was on the checkerboard floor. I was like, I'm going to fall. I know I'm going to fall. So I was like, no, just stick it out. And then as it happened, by me not getting it right, Dylan did get it right. And then Dylan got to go to the party and he was up that week anyway, which was lovely. But I did sit there and say, oh, can I go in the showers first? Because I copped everyone. So I just saw the way where they positioned me. But yeah, you know, it's an incredible experience and one I will never forget. And I would welcome everyone to do it if they ever got the opportunity.
It's a controversial one, wasn't he? Because people in there had like issues with him. I always find some of the issues that people have in Big Brother and these kind of reality shows hilarious, because on the outside, if they're being nominated, let's say, because he didn't do, like we saw this with Louis Walsh in the celebrity version, he doesn't do the dishes. And you're like, that, like, right, it can be annoying, but I'm like, is that enough of a reason to put people up? Or like, you know, doesn't clean or whatever, it's silly ones. I remember someone nominated Dylan because he cooks too much chicken and rice. And I was like, this is hilarious. But like, then there was other times when Dylan seemed to be fitting in and other times he seemed to really irritate people. So I'm intrigued now what you think he was like in the house and what you kind of thought since.
I had a very good relationship with Dylan in there. You've got to think Dylan was 39, I'm 40, Farida was 50.
Hmm.
She'll tell me if I've got that wrong. She might be 51. She might be 51. But we were the old. And then, of course, you've got Trish as well, which was in the middle of us all, 34, 35. So, you know, we were the oldies, I suppose, as such. And me and both myself and Dylan, we had a reason for being in there that was possibly different from everyone else's. I had my MS and the whole ethos of, you know, I'm 40 now, life begins at 40, is now or never. And of course he is an amputee, and he wants to show that actually that doesn't stop you from doing absolutely anything either. So yeah, we really gravitate towards each other. We shared our stories a lot. We get on very close still. There's no one I don't speak to. He actually just went to Ibiza yesterday or the day before, and I saw him with his pint about up past 7 in the morning saying, have one for me. But yeah, we do. We talk regularly. And I think what's probably the only way I can sort of say is, don't believe everything you see on the telly. Mm. We're really good people. And you get to see 44, depending on the show, 44 or 47 minutes every night. And we're together 24/7. And I know that I came out and the MS community was like, you could have done so much more raising the awareness of MS. And I was like, I spoke about it a lot. Every single person heard about myself. Like Chanel, when I came out, because she didn't know anything about MS. And Chanel, we sat on the bed one day, no, as in the bed that we had to sit on for hours on day two. And if we got off, we failed the task. And it was a great opportunity. They're so clever, Big Brother, because it was that opportunity where you share about yourselves. And when have you ever laid in bed with someone that you've only just met for 24 hours? And we sat there and I told her so much stuff about MS and something. She's like, I from that point, I never stopped talking about it. Whoever wanted to listen, I told them, and everyone wanted to hear about multiple sclerosis, but it doesn't make the edit. And I've got no control over that.
Yeah, you can't control that. But like there was times, and because you don't have Twitter, you won't have seen this, but you know, you might have been, I don't know, let's say a bit pissed off at something, or you might have been tired or whatever. And you could see there was a certain group of like either MS sufferers or people who are aware of the conditions. And so if somebody was kind of being like, oh, shut up, Carrie Monan or whatever, someone would write to take that going, are you aware that if you have MS, you need blank, blank hours sleep, or you need... So there was definitely like a group of people that were like educating kind of on your behalf a little bit, because I suppose if you watch it without thinking about the MS, you might be like, oh, why is she moaning about, you know, whatever. But then you're like, oh, well, actually, Liv and Paul were up in the room till 5 o'clock in the morning, and she was up at 9, and she needs sleep and she needs medication. So like you needed somebody there. And if it's not going to be shown on TV, it's nice at least that there were people doing that for you.
Yeah, I always knew I was going to be a lot like Marmite. I don't suffer fools gladly. I'm happy to have an opinion on most things. I'm not, you'd never be able to call me splinters. I don't sit on the fence at all. I have an opinion and I'm okay with that. And that's probably come with age. You know, I am 40 and I'm not scared to sort of have an opinion. So, yeah, I feel like, and I never, one probably one of the things as well, you know, when we were, you'll see us, I didn't ever want to let the side down. So when we're out there in the rain and we were trying to win something collectively as a group, you don't want to be the disabled one that lets the team down. Yeah. As it is, they're already standing up in the rain. I'm sitting in the rain. I've got my poncho over the back of me, so I'm sitting in this puddle of wet. And you might see it on telly, that particular segment of the show, for 3 or 4 minutes. You don't realise we've been out there for 2.5 hours. Yeah. It's so cold. It's not a summer Big Brother. It's October, November.
Yeah.
It's absolutely Baltic. It's so cold out there. And I never forget, this is something we'll literally, it's a meme. Like when the girls are knocking, you know, I had to do rock, paper, scissors to decide who else was coming in to do the glamping dolls. I remember just going, just rock, paper, scissors, damn it. And it was really like that, because the girls were overthinking it. They didn't want to upset each other. And the garden light was still red. So until it goes green, we can't go in, get towels, get showered, get warm, get dry. And you just sort of think, And your emotions are so high, and the pain of sitting there. Like, I was cold. It took me 3 days to get over that task. I was cold to the bone, but I weren't going to. I'm competitive. Mm. And if I'm going to do something, I'd go all in. Like, I would never have quit. Yeah. So,
both yourself and Dylan never let your disability stop you. You were like, no, I'm going, I'll try or whatever. Fair enough if you tried and you didn't complete it or whatever, but you were never going, I'm going to sit this out, actually, when you could have, you know, there would have been, you know, they see it in I'm a Celebrity all the time. They do like exempt from trials, you know, for medical reasons or whatever. But both of you just were like headstrong and were like, no, I'm doing this.
Yeah, and I was asked that before I went in. Welfare was incredible. They kept saying to me, can you do this? Will you be able to do that? Is there anything you can't do? And I literally wrote all the time, no, I want to. If I wouldn't want to ruin it. I wouldn't want them to dumb down a task in order to facilitate me. So if they sort of said, we really want to do this idea, but it's not going to fit you being in there, that's fine. But if I could, I would. 100% I would. There was nothing that I wouldn't have done. Yeah, nothing. The foul fast foods, the
that was disgusting.
Where I went really wrong was early doors. I disclosed my absolute hatred of tofu. Mm-hmm. And that was it then. That was the nail in my coffin. Oh, pardon the pun. I left by a coffin. That was the nail in my coffin because genuinely, it wasn't ever nice tofu cooked in a nice sauce. I've been told you to cook it like this with teriyaki and blah, 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 and noodles, blah, blah. It's beautiful. I will never touch tofu again because they used to give it to me out of a packet. And that, my friends, is unacceptable.
I'm surprised. Like I'd say, when you go places, people are always like, "Can I get you the tofu?"
Yeah,
just to wind you up.
I'll go into, and they think it's brilliant, and I love it, and I don't ever want to change. But I'll go into Tesco's, and people will be like, "Can I buy you this?" And they'll come over with tofu, or they'll put a tofu in my. Have you tried this? And like, do you want it in your basket? No, I don't. Have it in your basket and have a lovely time. But I love a sausage. I just, if I could live on one thing for the rest of my life, it would be a sausage sandwich. But tofu, not for me.
Well, when I said I was going to be talking to you, I obviously was getting loads of DMs all over the place from people. And of course, I have to talk about Jordan and Henry because, you know, you were there. You were there for the romance to start. Hashtag January. I can't believe how invested I got into. I put up on Twitter at one point, I have no love life. And here I am so invested in Jordan and Henry. I was like, yeah. Never met in my life. Like, I have never really been like that with like a reality couple or like famous people. I've never really had that thing. Well, I was obsessed. Wait, I was like, can they just add a couple more weeks on to Big Brother so I can just see how this goes? Because when Jordan made Henry cry that time, I was coming to lunch and I was going to kick ass.
Honestly, like, I was asked about it regularly when I came out. Is it real? And I was their biggest advocate. I was their biggest support. I said to them both, and I stand by it, I knew they were in love before they knew they were in love. I just, they will be in my life forever. I only spoke to Jordan actually yesterday, and me and my husband went and had some dinner with Jordan and Emmy in their new flat not so long ago. We did this ridiculous TikTok live where we were both making animal noises. I don't know if you heard about that. It went ridiculously big. It was, I'm the safari driver, and yeah, it's hilarious. But I can't talk on behalf of anybody else, but all I can say from the outside looking in, and someone that is genuinely close to the boys, it's real when they're happy, and long may it continue, because I adore Jordan's mother. I haven't met Henry's yet. She looks lovely, sounds amazing, so does his sister. But I will be with Jordan's mum at the wedding, and we're going to wear matching hats.
I just love the organic way it happened, because like, I know some people were like, oh, I don't know, is it real? I'm like, it's actually real, because you can see at the start it seemed like Jordan was more, or Henry was more into Jordan, and Jordan was kind of like, oh, do I like Matty? Kind of being a bit of a like, I'm not ready to to announce that I actually do like this person. And then it was him that was instigating all the bloody kisses. And you're like, we can see this, Jordan. So
I'm going to say, I feel like as well, like when, because people have spoken to me about this, about who instigated what, and the Matty thing. You know, we never knew about the Matty thing in the house. That wasn't a thing. When I got asked about this triangle, I was like, triangle. Like, it wasn't a thing at all. And I still think that was made a lot more of what it was, maybe even by the edit, because in the house, it was definitely it was Henry and Jordan all day long. Matty wasn't even in the equation. He really wasn't. Matty's got an amazing boyfriend. He spoke about Connor a lot. They're traveling at the moment. It wasn't a thing, but it's so weird when you come out, like, what it manifested to be, really something it isn't. And actually, I was forever saying, give people a break. Like, Jordan had never had a proper boyfriend. Henry hadn't had a proper, I don't think Henry had a proper boyfriend either. And these feelings were so strong. And you know, they are aware they've met on telly.
Yeah.
And would you want to declare your undying love to, you know, they haven't met your family, you know, you don't know if your mum likes them, for instance. I don't know, I feel like the audience were expecting so much more. But what I do know is what I saw in there and what I'm seeing now, it just feels nice and it feels real.
It must be so strange when you come out and they're like, people are talking to you, and like, it's like, as we said with Olivia and Paul, and then you're hearing this Matty and Jordan, and you're like, what, when? And you're, and then you see it's something that's pushed to us on the show. Yeah. And it was definitely pushed. And I know you haven't watched it back, but you will see there's like so many scenes where it's like Jordan and Matty, Jordan and Matty. And the way the camera looks, Henry's in a different room and he looks over and it looks longingly or whatever. And now you go, oh my God, when you hear that, for you guys, this wasn't even on the radar.
Honestly, so my husband was really like, I really thought you'd speak to this person more, this person more. And I was like, I spoke to everyone.
Yeah.
He was like, what? Like, me and Jenkin spent so much time together. Didn't see me speak to Jenkin once. Saw me literally get rid of his case, blow it up, get his case back by getting off the bed. And then you'd think we wouldn't even have spoken once. So yeah, no, so my husband was really disappointed. My husband was really, really a lot like, why didn't you speak to these people? And I was like, I spoke to everyone. I got on with everyone. But again, they can't, Big Brother is incredible, but they can't show everything.
Yeah.
They just can't.
And how did you feel leaving the house? Because obviously you didn't leave in the way that everybody leaves. How was that for you, that like that emotion of that day?
I was absolutely ready to go. I was like, stick a fork in this sausage. I'm done. I was tired. To get to week four of a 6-week stint was everything. I could have gone out week one. I had three things I wanted to do. I wanted to be up for eviction and survive eviction. I wanted to do a task that was collective and weirdly win. We worked together and win a Chinese takeaway. We won the Chinese takeaway for our fast food. And the third one was to do a task and win it and it be a benefit just for me. Well, of course, that was the glamping as well. So I was like, tick, tick, tick. If I went now, I'd be fine. And I'd done that on about 2.5 weeks. So, and at that point where you're only sort of really getting about 3.5 hours sleep, running on empty, it was a Halloween task. I was the house mummy, dressed as a mummy, left on the Halloween special. I was like, I said to a lot of them during the day, it's my time. I'm all right about this. If I left tonight as the mummy, dressed as a mummy, on an iconic, like, no one's going to forget the Halloween special.
Yeah.
I definitely won't. I was ready to go. I was so ready to go. I weren't worried about food. I weren't worried about drink. I did miss coffee a lot because you're not always guaranteed to have everything you want all the time. And if they do give you coffee, you might not have the sugar because you might have run out of that. So I wanted a nice cup of coffee. I did actually want a chicken sandwich meal from McDonald's. That was what I was. They were like, if you have one thing now, when I got outboard, and that was, I really wanted a chicken sandwich meal, a coffee, and to see my son and my family was everything, but to sleep. But I loved it so much. I slept really slept well for about 2 days and I was like, can I go back? I really want to.
Oh, well, it sounded like an amazing experience and like definitely you sell it well for anyone who's in the process or is interested in going into this year's edition. And obviously you're an MS ambassador for next week. And what else are we going to see from Kerry coming up in the next while?
I just want to continue being the disability advocate and flying the flag for people that maybe haven't got a voice, but I'm in such a privileged position now that I have got a voice. Just trying to navigate. I went to London yesterday, trying to navigate your way around London using public transport. We're not there yet, folks. Mm-hmm. I can't even cross one side of the road to the other with my scooter in a way that is without having to drive a mile before going down a big, to find a drop curb. Yeah. There are things that I have to do. I'd love to go into broadcasting. I'm really enjoying sort of the plus size fashion work that I'm doing around people with disabilities as well. I'm just having a lovely, lovely, lovely time. And I just want to raise as much awareness as I can for the disabled community. And just say to people that actually nothing is, dream big because everything's achievable. So yeah.
You're a great ambassador because you're looking for the things that can be fixed and can be fixed easily and quickly and are really simple when you actually say them out loud. So I'm sure that the members of the community are so delighted to have someone who is outspoken and not afraid to feckin' say things.
Oh, thank you. You've been a delight. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no worries. And I'm so blessed that you talked to me today. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me. You look after yourself. Feel free to talk about if you want to. Feel free to include my discoloured fire alarm that is getting replaced next week, because folks, you've got to have them replaced after 10 years and I didn't know that. So safety first.
Well, there we go. I'll include it then. Oh, just for you. All right, lovely. Talk
see
to you.
Bye, darling. Bye-bye, love. Bye.
Well, I hope you all loved that. We probably would have talked for another hour, I'd say, myself and Carrie, because we got on so well, but she had to go on TV. So I have to thank her so much. She gave me so much of her time. Like, I'm honestly not joking when I say it was about an hour and 15 and we were still going to talk more. If her agent wasn't ringing her telling her, you need to be on TV. So I am just so thankful to Carrie for giving me the insight to Big Brother. It's something I'd always love to do, but I'm too self-conscious and I'm too emotional. So if people are on Twitter calling me, I know, fat or boring or smelly, I would not be well. So I say fair play to anyone who does it, and I'm excited to see who the crap will be this year. Honest to God, it will take someone amazing to beat January for me, because I'm obsessed with Jordan and Henry. Like, there's a love story I need in my life at all times. Go follow Kerry. She's on TikTok and Instagram. She does great awareness this week, especially for MS. So you can go and see her MS Unfiltered this week and get to learn a little bit more. But also you'll see that, like, if you had an idea in Big Brother House of who was friends and who wasn't friends, etc., they're all good mates. You know, they all talk. She always has lives on her Instagram with different members. She obviously has the boys on quite a lot. You see Olivia, different people like that. So you will understand that they are actually pals, and that probably what we saw maybe wasn't as dramatic as it seemed. As much as we love the drama. If you enjoy this episode, please feel free to follow on all social media and also on your podcast provider there. So if you're on Spotify or Apple or Google or Good Pods or whatever you're on. Also, I'd love some ratings, some reviews. That would be absolutely amazing. If you want to, I did set a challenge last week. If you are leaving an Apple review, you can either say how much you love the podcast, or you could write down your favorite Irish phrase or saying. So it could be, what's the crack? It could be as simple as that. It could be an Irish word. It could be, you know, Tatu Ladronach. It could be Amwil Cadogam Dolgadu and Leveris. It could be an actual Irish slang word in English, whatever it is. Maybe, and if you're not from Ireland, I'm sure it's a word you associate with us. So whether it's leprechauns or potato, I don't really care. But I would love to have you guys leave a little review on Apple, and of course on Spotify, if you're listening to this on Spotify. Every episode, well, no, okay, not every episode, because I didn't do them on all the old episodes, but nearly every episode has either Q&A or a poll, and this episode will have one on Spotify as well. So just look, you can vote on them and you can comment on them, and then it'll go onto the page, and actually it really helps other people find the podcast. So today I'm going to pop a poll about your favorite Big Brother contestant. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to leave Jordan and Henry out. I think I might, just because they'll obviously win. So I'm like, might put up, who's your favorite housemate except for Jordan and Henry? Anyway, I'm fluffing and blabbing on here. I am so, so thankful to all of you who got me to where I am today. And I'm so thankful to Kerry for coming on and talking about it. And can I just say, you're all fantastic. If you're here and you've listened to this, you're just absolutely amazing. Tá tú go hiontach.
Sunlath, everyone. I'm going to talk to you soon. We're back next week. Okay, bye.